Okay, I don't know. Have we started the recording?
The recording has started.
Great, thank you. I want to start before we get into this. Is actually want to do a roll call of the people that are at the table, and so the counselors that are present, as well as those that may be online. Just to I didn't do this earlier because people were trickling in, but now it seems like we have a good amount of people. So if I could ask Glenn to do a roll call.
Jeff Newman.
Present.
Ching Chao.
Present.
Jonathan Robinson.
Present.
Yoav Karen.
Here.
Mason Cole. Present. And as we know, Stefan will be in later. Thomas Rickert.
Present.
Zahid Jamil.
Present.
John Brerard.
I am here.
Brian Winterfeld.
Present.
David Taylor. David Taylor has been delayed, and he may only come in tomorrow. Oswaldo Nova.
Oswaldo, he is present.
Yes. Wolf Ulrich Nobel.
Yes, present. Present.
Bill Drake.
Present.
Wendy Seltzer.
Here.
Rafik Damak.
I believe Rafik was delayed on his flight.
Thank you, Wendy. Joy Lidicott.
Here.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter.
Yes.
Lanry Ajayi.
Present.
Carlos Aguirre.
Present.
Alan Greenberg.
Here.
Han-Chan Lui. I don't think we have Han-Chan Lui here. Yoav. I called your name, didn't I? Yeah. Okay. And for staff, we have with us Liz Gaster, Margie Milam, Marika Koenigs, Julie Headland, Brian Peck, Barry Cobb. I know David was here earlier, David Olive. And that is for the council. Jeff, would you like people in the audience to...
Wait, Glenn forgot me. That's okay.
Mary, I'm very sorry. Yes, I did indeed.
I can leave.
Round the table, we have J. Scott Evans. And is there anybody else that I've missed?
Well, if we could just I think going to the audience would take a little time. So okay. Why don't we just, how about the ICANN staff that's present? Let's get that on the record and then
yes,
move on.
Yes, we've got that, thanks.
Oh, did I miss that?
Yes.
Sorry. I do listen to everything, really.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Then that's everybody around the table.
Thanks, Glenn. So the next topic we have really is kind of twofold. One is to do an update on where the drafting team is for the International Olympic Committee Red Cross, Red Crescent issue, and then to go into the preliminary issue report for the protection of international organization names in new GTLDs. So the update from the drafting team, I'll give a real quick one. And we'll start with that update, and then we'll go to the presentation, and then we'll take questions and comments. On the drafting team, I think everyone knows since the last meeting in Costa Rica, we actually held a special meeting to talk about the top-level protections that the drafting team had come up with. That was approved by the GNSO. That went to the board. The board declined to approve those recommendations, citing mostly a lack of time and not wanting to change the status quo. And so those top-level changes weren't adopted. It turns out with the reveal, there were no Olympic or Red Cross applications that I saw or ones that would have been captured by the recommendations, so it seems like we're okay there. The role of the drafting team after the top-level recommendations was to discuss the second-level recommendations for this next round. In the interim after that, there was a motion that was approved, and the preliminary issue report is in response to that motion to start the, in the small letters, PDP process on the protection of international organization names and new GTLDs. So that was approved in April, I believe, if I got my months correct. And then Since then, the drafting team has still continued to meet. We had a council meeting two meetings ago, I think, where we decided to continue the work of the drafting team as it is, and if the council wants to address that at this meeting or the next on the meeting on Wednesday to address the status of that, they're certainly welcome to do that. But at this point, we've indicated to the GAC that we're continuing the status quo. The drafting team is still working. Sad to say, though, on the progress of the drafting team since the last meeting has not been so great. We've had several, I think, very good calls with the International Olympic Committee and the Red Cross talking about some of the legal bases and rationale for the protection of these organizations. Those were well attended. There are transcripts from those meetings. And right now we're in a process of asking each of the stakeholder groups, the constituencies, to come back with, now that they've heard the presentations by the Olympic Committee and Red Cross, is to come back with either additional questions or come back with initial viewpoints on the GAC proposal, which was submitted in September, which I know they're going to go over now. Brian will go over a little bit in his presentation that's covered in the report. So, again, the update from the drafting team, we are meeting here on Wednesday, I believe, at 8 a.m., and we'll try to make some more progress there. I strongly encourage all of the stakeholder groups, constituencies, and advisory committees to have those discussions before that Wednesday session so we can have a productive session and move it forward. With that, let me go to Brian to give a presentation on the preliminary issue report, and then we'll take questions from questions and comments from the rest of the council and those that are out there. So, Brian.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Jeff. And Jeff, thank you, because you've already covered some of the background that's going to bring us up to date to where we are now, so appreciate that. As Jeff mentioned, the council did approve the drafting team's recommendations for protection of the IOC and Red Cross names at the top level for the first round. That was declined. Those recommendations were declined by the new GTLD committee of the ICANN board in April for the reasons that Jeff stated. Since to Costa Rica as well, as council is aware, the board issued a letter on March 11th to both the GNSO Council and the GAC requesting for policy advice on whether to protect international governmental organizations, or IGO names, at also at the top and second levels. The GNSO responded that it will defer any action on this particular request until the GAC first provides its policy advice on the board, feeling that it would be appropriate, given the nature of IGOs, to first work with the GAC on determining what type of recommendation or policy advice the GAC might determine. Once the GAC decides to do so and does submit it to the board, the GNSO felt that was more appropriate then to take any sort of action in response to that. In addition, in April, the GNSO Council adopted a motion requesting an issue report on special protections for international organization names and acronyms at the top and second level for all new GTLDs. This includes the Red Cross, the International Olympic Committee, and IGOs. Hence, the issue report covers not just the Red Cross and IOC, but IGO issues as well. Where we are right now, as you know, the moratorium that was the result of the board resolution from Singapore on the prohibition of the use of IOC Red Cross names at the top level for new GTLDs expires with this initial round of applications. So there is currently no protections at the top level for the IOC and Red Cross names in future rounds. In addition, there are currently no special protections for the IOC and Red Cross names provided at the second level. As Jeff mentioned, the drafting team is currently working on evaluating the GAC proposal as well as possible other recommendations for protection of these terms on the second level. The preliminary issue report and the public comment forum related to the preliminary issue report were both published and opened on the 4th of June. The public comment period is currently open. In addition, in response to the GAC proposal from September of last year, recommending that permanent protections be provided or extended to Red Cross and IOC names at both the first and second levels, for all rounds. The response to that is that the drafting team is continuing to work on that, evaluating both the GAC proposal and possible recommendations. And the GNSO provided that update to the GAC with a letter on the 7th of June. So that's where we are currently right now. As I mentioned, the preliminary issue report was published on June 4th. The objective basically is twofold. One is to define the top type of organizations that should be evaluated in any related PDP, so one be initiated for any such protection at both the top and second level. And the second is to describe how the PDP could be structured to analyze whether ICANN should adopt policies to protect any such organization names at both the top and second level. The scope includes both IGOs and non-government organizations, and again, at both the top and second levels of new GTLDs. The report briefly outlines current protections that are available at both the top level and the second level. For example, at the top level, you have the review and objection process currently underway for the applied for strings. We're all aware of the big reveal on the 13th of June. Now that the names are publicly available, organizations have an opportunity to review the names that have been applied for and take, you know, be able to avail themselves of the objection processes that are available under the applicant guidebook. Including, or in addition, there are legal rights objections that may be applicable to IGOs. For example, if they meet the criteria for .INT names, such as being established by a treaty among governments and or widely recognized as having international personality and is subject to international law, if they were to meet that criteria, they could make themselves available for the legal rights objections available for new GTLDs. The independent objector has been appointed, and again, is to act solely in the public interest. And then you have the PDDRP process for holders of a word mark specifically protected by statute or treaty. On the second level, currently available protections include the Trademark Clearinghouse, Trademark Claims Process, and Sunrise protections. The PDDRP is also available for the second level, and you have the Uniform Rapid Suspension System, which provides for a more quicker process than the UDRP. In addition, kind of somewhat related to this matter of what's currently available in terms of protections at both the top level and second level for organization names, the staff recently submitted a board directive briefing paper on the issues related to concerns over the need or perceived need of second level defensive registrations in view of current protections. That was submitted to the GNSO Council on the 4th of June. That is something that looks at, again, what are currently available in terms of both the top level and second level for names of these organizations and whether that is sufficient enough or whether indeed there needs to be additional policy advice or developments, policy developed to address the need for second level defensive registrations. Preliminary report also suggests issues to explore if a PDP were to be initiated, including the definition of international organizations, to try to define what is the scope of international organizations that would be, you know, qualified to be able to avail themselves to special protections. Quantifying the entities to be considered for special protection. In doing some basic research, for example, there are over 5,000 IGOs. There are over 35,000 nonprofit NGOs. Obviously, that is, you know, a tremendous amount of numbers. So the PDP, if to be initiated, is recommended to take a look at how to quantify, you know, within that what subsets might be eligible for special protections. Another issue to explore would be the scope of protections under international treaties currently existing, as well as domestic laws for the protection of Red Cross and IOC names. Looking at the U.S. law, for example, there are certain exceptions. These could be useful for the PDP process to determine what, if any, limitations might be placed on protections to help protect, you know, currently legitimate uses of such terms. Another issue recommended would be to distinguishing between the Red Cross and IOC from other international organizations. There are certain similarities that are listed in the report. There are certain differences. Certain similarities include, for example, you know, the same level of international recognition and being nonprofit organizations that the Red Cross and the IOC are. Other types of similarities include the amount of influence or the number of countries where they operate. Basic differences include, the specific treaties and national laws that protect the IOC and Red Cross names that aren't available for IGOs. So it's important to maybe to try to look at the similarities and differences to help maybe distinguish and whether these distinguishing characteristics of these organizations would be important in determining what types of protections, if any, would be available for these organizations. Another issue recommended would be to looking into establishing an objective set of criteria to determine which international organizations would qualify for any special protections. Again, as we've seen with both the IOC and the Red Cross and with the IGOs, there is the risk, if you will, that the board, the GAC, the GNSO Council will be, inundated with hundreds, if not thousands, of requests from individual organizations. It might be helpful to develop a set of criteria so that then you would have a set that could be weighed against when you have organizations coming forth with requests for special protections. The staff recommendation for the preliminary issue report is for the GNSO Council to consider whether or not to initiate a PDP as an approach to develop any additional policy advice in response to the board request on additional protections, keeping in mind that the three elements that are kind of outstanding that were taken into account in both issuing the request to issue an issue report and the scope of this issue report. One is you have, the Singapore resolution from last year where the board basically, imposed a moratorium at the top level for the first round for IOC and Red Cross names, but only, for that first round until further policy advice is received from the GNSO Council. You have the March 11th request for policy advice on IGO names, and then, of course, you have the GAC proposal from September of last year recommending permanent protection at both the top and second level for Red Cross and IOC names. If a PDP is initiated, the staff recommendation suggests that the scope be limited to IGOs and nonprofit NGOs that are protected by treaties and national laws in multiple jurisdictions. The other recommendation or suggestion would be is that if a PDP is to be initiated, the GNSO Council carefully consider the context of the minimum required timeline, the workload issues, and the need probably for additional resources to meet the demands of a PDP, especially in light of any possible recommendations that might come out of it at both the top and second level. A clear example of this would be is if a PDP were to come out with policy recommendations for the second level, given that the current timeline would call for the designation of the new top level sometime in early next year, and given the timelines, minimum timelines required for a PDP, take that into consideration whether that would be feasible or not. So something to consider if indeed to at the time the GNSO Council considers whether to initiate a PDP on this preliminary issue report, or the final issue report. Next steps, the drafting team, as Jeff mentioned, has a working session scheduled on the 27th of June, this coming Wednesday. The public comment reply period closes on the 16th of July. The ICANN community is encouraged to participate in the public comment process and also to comment, again, what the scope of the PDP should be if one to be initiated, whether it should only be international organizations that are nonprofit and are covered or protected by treaties and laws in multiple national jurisdictions, or whether it should be expanded to include other types of international organizations such as IGOs. Once the public comment period closes on the 16th, staff will review and publish a public comment summary report. Staff will then publish and submit a final issue report to the council, at which time the council will then consider whether to initiate a PDP on this issue. Some additional resources, the issue report itself, the public comment form, and then, as I mentioned, on a related topic, the Defense of Registrations briefing paper that was submitted to the council on the 4th of June. And that basically concludes the presentation.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Let me start a queue. I see Jonathan. I'm going to put myself in as well. But really quick, you said the reply period, but the regular comment period doesn't close until when?
The 25th of June.
Okay, just to clarify. Okay, so I have Jonathan, I have myself, Zahid, and Thomas, and Chuck. Okay, so let me start with Jonathan.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Brian. I mean, first of all, I'd like to compliment you guys on ongoing good work, and I think it's a positive affirmation of our decision to continue the work of the drafting team to deal with this sort of second phase, or part 2B, if you like, but part B of the work. So it's great to see, and it was a helpful presentation to understand where things are going. My question really relates to, in a sense, this peripheral issue relative to this one, which is this second level defensive registrations briefing paper, and to the extent that I think I understand that you guys are not tackling that, it's just you've just brought it up in the context of your work. So I think the question then is for us as a GNSO is if you aren't tackling it, which I understand you're not, where are we or where or how are we going to deal with this item? And so it's for all of us. I'm not sure the answer is available right now. If anyone's got any suggestions or comments in response to that, I'd appreciate that. That's the question.
Thanks, Jonathan. I look at Brian. Do you want to make a comment on that, or
Sure. I mean, the paper itself came from a board-directed motion from the new GDLD committee that staff prepare a background briefing paper provided to the council to consider whether, I think the basic question is whether the current number of protections available at the top and second level are adequate to address this perceived need that they found in the community that came about from the public comment period earlier this year, which basically was for the top level, but most of the comments addressed the second level concern. And so the board, seeing that, you know, asked for this briefing paper for the council to consider, as I said, whether there needs to be further, you know, either a look at this issue or whether further policy advice should be developed to address this concern. So we brought this, you know, in the context of this presentation, as you point out correctly, this is not part of the scope of the issue report or the work of the drafting team. But it's somewhat related because, again, when we look at this, whether additional protection should be extended to these organizations, you know, the question comes as to whether the current level of protections are adequate or not. So within that, we thought it'd be, you know, helpful to at least bring this to the attention of the council and to the community.
So let me just ask, and maybe it's just with the flurry, have we gotten this briefing paper yet?
Yes. It was submitted on the 4th of June. Kurt sent it to Stefan, and Stefan distributed it to the council the same day.
Sorry. Okay.
That's okay. Thanks. And then there's a link to it as well. So it's in the council email archive list, and it was distributed by Stefan on the 4th.
Okay. So I've added Mary to the list. I'm gonna my own comment on the preliminary issue report. Something I'd like to see in there that's not in there. Sorry, I took some notes here.
Sure.
Just want to read it. There's nothing in the issue report about the rationale the board used in originally providing the protections for the IOC and the Red Cross. So you did a lot of the rationale that the GAC had, some of the rationale the work team had. Part of our big problem that we've discussed many times is we have no idea what the rationale that the board had. And in fact, I went back just now, and it's still redacted out of it was the June 20th meeting, it was the briefing papers in Singapore. It's all redacted, the part about the rationale that was used. It's all, quote, privileged and confidential. That is key for us. We've been asking for that ever since the drafting team started. Still don't have it. And I think without that information, the preliminary issue report is incomplete at best. We're all trying to make assumptions as to how the board came about. And even if the answer is the board didn't have a rationale, which I'm hoping is not the answer, but if that's it, we at least should know that. Get that out. Just say that the board did it because they wanted to move forward with the process. That's better than not saying anything, because right now it's just two pages of, quote, privileged and confidential. That's what it says. And that's just not good enough for us. And, you know, if the board deemed it appropriate to protect those marks, then let's find out why. So that's there. The other question I have is part of a reference in the paper on possibly using the criteria that ICANN uses in .int, and it lists the criteria, but there's nothing in there about the experience of ICANN, what the process is within ICANN, the approval process, what are some of the issues that they've had with approving .int, if they have, you know, so what's, do they just basically approve every request, or is there some, do they constantly get requests that are turned down? I don't know. In fact, there's very little known about the ICANN operation of the .int registry, and I think that's one of a bigger, broader issue we've been asking for a while. But that should be in there if that's one of the recommendations that we consider. There's also a reference to the clearinghouse being able to accept IGO names that are protected by statute. Has there been any kind of research as to how many of those names are protected by statute and what the plans are of the clearinghouse and implementation to accept those? Because I haven't seen that in the implementation documents for the clearinghouse. ICANN staff asks, so in this they ask, in the preliminary issue report it asks the working group to examine the legal basis for the protections of the IOC and the Red Cross, and we've done some of that on the drafting team, but we'd like actually the legal research that's been done by ICANN staff and by the GAC in coming to those same conclusions. We haven't gotten those either. Those are my questions. So they're just things to consider, and I guess I hope you can consider that my public comments, because I don't know if I can get it written down by June 25th.
Okay.
So With that, let me go to the next person is Zahid, and then I'll add Alan to the list.
Thank you. I was looking at the slide dealt with sort of suggested protections at the or existing protections at the top level, and then there was one that said existing protections at the second level, and there were three items mentioned. There was Sunrise, I think there was something of PDRPM, I think, mm-hmm. and there was URS. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that URS, and I'm looking at the 4th June 2012 proposed draft procedure, says that these proceedings are for trademarks. It says that a complainant with outlining a trademark rights would file this action. It is my understanding, and I think I'm right, is that the IOC, the Red Cross names, are actually not trademark. So to that extent, the URS wouldn't apply, is my understanding, to as a protection at second level for Red Cross, and you may want to clarify that in the slide, unless I'm wrong, you know, somebody has a clarification on that. So you might have to think about how would they be protected at second level, and you can't do that using what we've designed for trademarks just.
No, and that's the point we'll take. I think if keep in mind, too, that the scope of the preliminary issue report is not just the Red Cross or the IOC, it's all IGOs. And so the URS might be applicable for some organizations, and it, as you point out, is not for all. So.
Okay, thanks, Saeed. I'm just looking, sorry, just before I go to Thomas, I'm looking back at the ICANN announcement page. I don't see that briefing paper on there. Maybe that's why I missed it.
It wasn't published on the announcement. It was sent from Kurt to the GNSO Council.
Okay. That could be why I missed it. We get a lot of emails.
Sure.
So, yeah. So, okay. That's. We should probably save some time to discuss that. I have Thomas next.
Thanks, Jeff. First of all, thanks for the issue report. It's good work, very helpful. On page 33 and 34, you write about scope, and you quote the bylaws of ICANN, and then test whether this particular task falls under the scope of what ICANN can do. So you quote the bylaws and then state, evaluating whether to grant additional protections in new GTLDs to international organizations is within the scope of ICANN's mission, and so on and so forth. And then come later four or five criteria which you answer to conclude that this is within the scope. My question to you is whether these five criteria are sort of official test questions to see whether a certain task is within the scope of ICANN. I haven't seen that being the official test, but I might not see the complete picture. And if it weren't the case, I at least don't understand from the line of argumentation that you use in the paper why special protection should be granted to special user groups and derive that from ICANN's bylaws. And when there was a discussion surrounding reserved names and all of that, we would talk generally about protections. And the rights protection mechanisms that we see now are general protections for all user groups. So I don't see in this paper the link between the bylaws and the justification for us to make exemptions and grant special protections. I'm not saying there shouldn't be any, but the way it's phrased now basically says we have to test this, and then the answer is yes. And I think that's a little bit short, because then basically that will open the floor to whatever exemptions there might be requested by whatever requesting parties.
Brian, you want to?
No, I think the purpose of the issue report is for the council to consider, you know, whether to initiate a PDP to look at that issue, whether indeed, you know, any special exemptions should be provided, or any special protections, I should say, should be provided for a certain group or you know, certain organizations rather than general exceptions.
Yes, but the paper states this as a fact, that this is within the scope of ICANN's bylaws, and I don't see
I think what it says is that it's within the scope of being the subject of consideration under a PDP. It's not saying that as a fact that there should be, it's within the scope of providing special protections for a certain group of organizations. I think that the analysis there is that is the issue itself within the scope of a basis to issue or to initiate a PDP under which the PDP would then look at the issue. It's not stating as a fact that indeed that there should be special protections granted to a certain group of organizations.
I agree to the second point.
Okay.
It doesn't state the result that there should be protection because that is actually the outcome of the PDP. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I think that the line of argumentation is a little bit rushed to say that this is within the scope, because I would doubt that we can take it for granted that ICANN should work on every request to grant special protections mm-hmm. or special exemptions to special smaller user groups.
Okay, Marge, you want to address that?
Yeah, I mean, your concern, I think it came up in the past with the PDP on registry contracts. I think it's an issue that's in the bylaws. You don't want a PDP to be specific to one party, and I think that's where some of your concern is, whether it could apply more broadly to a larger group. And so theoretically, if the PDP, focused on special protections for a class of people, that then it's probably okay within the scope. Whether it's obviously the council and the drafting team that comes up with whether it's appropriate to have that policy developed. But from the bylaws perspective, they just want to make sure that the PDP is not targeted to one party or that it has a more broader application. And so that's why that's mentioned in the issue report. And that comes from, I think it's the bylaws to actually talk about what should go in the issue report and also the PDP manual that was recently adopted, just to kind of give framework for how that scope discussion takes place. But your question is valid, is should there be a discussion? Is it appropriate to have a policy focused on a particular group of people? And that's something that that the working group could look at. But from the issue report perspective, we're just saying yes, it's something that can be looked at. If that makes sense.
Okay, I have in the queue. I have Chuck, Mary, Alan, and I see Joy. And then Christian. Okay, I got.
Thanks, Jeff. Chuck Gomes from VeriSign. Could you put up slide 7, please? There we go. Thank you. The last bullet I wanted to talk to, Barry, I think the point there is very well taken. I just want to reemphasize that if a PDP is done and some policy is established, that the criteria really does have to be objective. Otherwise, we're going to be going round and round every time some special group wants protections. So that's just an early warning, I guess, that we really need to work on that and make sure that it is clearly defined objective criteria that we can apply readily when any group, in fact, they shouldn't even have to come to us. They should be able to tell whether they're eligible or not. And that's not necessarily an easy task, but a very important one. If you could jump to slide 8 for me. Forgive me, a little amused when you said minimum required timeline in the last sub-bullet there. One thing I'd point out, though, is that if a PDP is established and a policy is ultimately approved by the board, whether or not it is before new GTLDs are delegated or not, it would become a policy that all registry operators would have to implement anyway. So I'm not sure that we have to, if I'm understanding this correctly, worry too much about the timing of it if it is a policy. Obviously, it'd be nice if it was done before TLDs were delegated, but it may be tough to do it very quickly, as we all know, on these types of issues. So that's just a comment. Last of all, I think it would be very important for the council, if you decide to do a PDP, maybe even before you make that decision, to continue communications with the GAC, and then if a PDP is established, to very early in the process request GAC input and do that on an ongoing basis. Now, we all know from experience that it's very unlikely that we'll have any GAC participation in the PDP working group, but this is an area where we can ask for input, and I think we'll get they will be responsive on that if we do that throughout, and that will, I think, really not only help our relationships with the GAC, but be constructive in the PDP itself if one is established.
Thanks, Chuck. I think your last point is very important about working with the GAC, and I think that relates to a topic that is on the GAC agenda, which is the PDP process in general and how do we take their input and get them involved as early as possible. Okay, I have Mary, Alan, Joy, and then in the back. So, Mary.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Mary Wong. Two points. The first is a reference back to, I think, Zahid's earlier point about the Red Cross. I don't think it's true that the Red Cross cannot use the URS. I think that as long as the Red Cross has a trademark protected in a jurisdiction, and I don't know how many are where, but I'm pretty sure that it does, that it can use the URS. That doesn't necessarily change his point, but since I thought that statement might be somewhat misleading, I wanted to make that clarification. I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. The second point is really similar to Chuck's last point, and so I won't repeat it, but what I will add for the sake of the council and community discussion today, as well as with the GAC, a reminder of the GAC's letter of April 12, I think it was, to the board, where it said a couple of fairly general things, but things that I think we need to bear in mind in our discussion. First, that they reaffirmed the need to protect the IOC and Red Cross at the top and second levels, and they said specifically that, and I quote, the GAC considers the existence of such two-tiered protection as creating the criteria relevant to determining whether any other entities should be afforded comparable enhanced protection. And then they go on to say that they don't, at this point, want to offer any specific policy advice on the IGO issue, but that in the event that additional IGOs are found to meet the above criteria, this would be a consideration in the formulation of GAC advice for future rounds. So a reminder, and I do think that Chuck's point is a very important one, Jeff, as you said, and we do need to consider this.
Okay, thanks, Mary. Alan?
Thank you. A number of points. First, on the issue that Thomas raised regarding bylaws, I guess I read it a little bit differently. ICANN is the body who is being given responsibility for the generic domain namespace, and within that domain, within that area, is the responsibility to do it properly. And if that may or may not mean protection for certain TLDs, but I don't think it needs to be explicit in the bylaws. The fact that we are supposed to be good custodians means we're unfortunately obliged to figure out what that means and then act on it. So I think it's implicit in the overall responsibility we have. Jeff made a comment which I'd like to reinforce. We're dealing with some really thorny issues. We really need information as to why recommendations have been made, what investigations have already been done within ICANN, and to be hiding things, saying we can't tell you the whole facts, it's secret, it means they're tossing something over the wall to the GNSO and not giving the GNSO the tools to do it properly. And I think that is, I can use a number of adjectives I won't use in a recorded conversation, but I think that's a rather poor way to act. And I similarly think if this is an issue which is so fraught with import that you have to redact two pages of rationale in a board discussion, the various bodies involved are providing good legal support for us. We should be getting similar good legal support from ICANN on these working groups. Otherwise, we're going to make recommendations which will then be told, sorry, we can't tell you why, but we can't accept your answer, or something like that. And that's just not a way to properly do business. So if this is really important, give us the resources, which is both information and staff, to do it properly. With regard to the issue of trademark and Red Cross, my understanding from discussions with them is some Red Cross organizations have trademarked their name, and they therefore have the privilege of being able to use the future URS or the UDRP, and they have done so. But that's an accident of the fact they've decided to trademark them in their jurisdiction. They can't use the process by merit of the of their other rights to the name. And lastly, I point out that we are now in the position where we may have three parallel activities looking at the same basic subject. That has two implications. It's quite possible the Red Cross IOC group will come back and say, no, we don't need any more protections. The general one will say, yes, we need much more protection at the second level, which are completely opposite results. And then we're going to look at a PDP in a longer term, which can yet take a third variation. We really have to get our act together and figure out how to do this. For the people who have a particular interest in these issues, the workload is going to be unbelievably ridiculous if they're going to try to have the same people involved in all three conversations. And if you don't, you have the possibility of really interesting results. I don't know how we're going to handle this, but we really need to think about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And I did ask as a session, I just sent a note to our policy staff to add this specific item onto the wrap-up session at the very least to figure out how the three different streams that we have and figure out the best way forward. Okay, I have Joy.
Thanks, Jeff. Joy Liddycote for the record. Thank you very much for that issues report and the synthesis and thinking that's gone into it. Much appreciated. Just a question, an observation and a question from my own experience in working in the United Nations with many of the international government organisations and international organisations. I see in the options that you've proposed that the working group should evaluate options for international governmental organisations, firstly, and secondly, international organisations of a particular character. And I wonder whether some thought has gone into uncoupling those and considering them separately in separate processes. For example, international governmental organisations generally of a different character and defined quite distinctly compared to the somewhat more amorphous category of international organisations. And that may be a practical way forward in those areas where, from experience, many of the discussions have got quite murky when we've gone into the issue of national laws, international treaties, and how many governments have signed them, how many haven't, and so on. Whereas one would assume in relation to IGOs, international governmental organisations, that the GAC at least would have some clarity and unanimity around those which are recognised in other intergovernmental fora. And certainly I would encourage those, particularly from intergovernmental regional groupings in developing countries, the African Union and others, to be thinking during the submission period about the utility of perhaps further options to uncouple should the PDP proceed. Thanks.
Okay. I have... thanks, Joy. I have... I saw in the, I saw Christian. Are you still here? Oh, sorry, Stefan. Sorry. I apologize. If you could just introduce yourself for the transcript.
Okay, thank you very much. Stefan Hankins, International Committee of the Red Cross, and I'll be speaking on behalf of the International Movement of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and its respective components. First of all, we'd like to thank the GNSO really for its continued attention and commitment on this issue, and also its commitment in particular to adequately address the protection and reservation of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, and related designations. which we have submitted constitutes a global public interest which ICANN and its respective bodies need to respect and to implement. I would like here just to recall a few points and maybe also to in response to some of the points that have been made this morning, and in particular to recall the very unique rationale for the protection of the names, which relates, as you know, clearly from public international law treaties, which are today universally ratified, the Geneva Conventions, and to submit also that the issue of the protection of the Red Crescent names does not necessarily fit squarely within the questions raised in the issue's report, namely the extension of a reservation or protective regime to the denominations or names of other organizations. We recently submitted to the board actually a detailed position paper which I may refer you to. I think it will be made public very shortly, but it also outlines the points I will make. So once again, on the legal rationale of the protection for the Red Cross, Red Crescent designations, they stem from public international treaties, international humanitarian law. They don't stem from the affiliation to any particular organization. And I think this is a very key and important point to clearly understand. They stem from the international protection under international humanitarian law of designations of the protective emblems of armed forces medical personnel. That's the rationale for the protection. And states have undertaken, by virtue of their participation in the relevant treaties, to implement that protection in their domestic legislation. Of course, the Red Cross, Red Crescent actors are entitled under international law to use the designations, but that's not the primary purpose of the designations. That's a secondary purpose. The global public interest has to do with protecting medical services of armed forces and those who care for the wounded and sick on the battlefield. That's why these treaties were actually adopted and why states have an obligation also to implement that protection within their domestic legal orders, as has been submitted on past occasions and notably by the GAC communication to ICANN's board of September last year, which highlights the number of domestic laws which protect these denominations. Again, I also want to underline once more that the protection does not stem from trademark laws. It's not because the denominations have been registered by Red Cross bodies under trademark laws that they are protected. They are protected because of international and domestic legislation, as I have referred to. In that relation, we also wanted to underline that by virtue of ICANN's own articles of incorporation, there is a requirement to respect relevant international law treaties and obviously also domestic laws which bind ICANN. U.S. legislation protects these denominations. And again, in that regard, you know, we believe that this does place the claim outside the spectrum of the issues report that has been submitted and potential developments that would come out of that. As regards what we've called for, obviously, we're calling for permanent protection at first and second levels of these designations in multiple languages as international law itself requires. We're calling for the possibility for the Red Cross, Red Crescent actors, as international law itself provides, to register the names as they so require. At second level, the Red Cross, Red Crescent has registered quite a large number of of denominations, but of course the costs involved under the new GTLD program, if we were to do this, would be quite astronomous. And finally, we're calling for a string similarity review in line with public international law, which itself protects the denominations and prohibits also imitations of the designations, which would bring us into the issues of designations which are confusingly similar, and the prohibition of strings that are confusingly similar with the said denominations. So thank you very much. This is what I wanted to highlight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. I'm going to go to, I think Margie had a comment.
On a separate point, it's the question of how to, it's more along the lines of what Alan was saying, how do you manage these different projects? And one of the suggestions that I was thinking about as we were preparing the issue report was, how does this defensive registrations paper play into it? And if the GNSO Council, for example, were to want to take up that issue, the general issue of what's raised in the defensive registrations paper, how would that happen? Another issue report? I mean, it seems like a lot of work to get to the point of starting a process that's already going to be touched upon with respect to these issues if this issue report gets acted upon first. So one of my thoughts was if the council felt that should also be addressed, perhaps in the public comment forum, it could be raised that the scope of the PDP could be broader than just the international organizations, and then at that point we wouldn't necessarily have to do a second issue report if that was where the council wanted to go. And so I guess that maybe that's something for you all to think about, is whether that would be an appropriate thing to do or consider. At which point, since we haven't issued the final issue report, once we take into account public comment, if public comment is that the scope should be broader than just IGOs, we could at least make that as a recommendation that the council consider that. So anyways, I was just trying to play out some of these different possibilities, and that might be something you all consider.
Thanks, Margie. That would be a really broad broad issue report, a broad PDP. It's almost, you kind of run into the whole transfer issue where you'd have to break it into subparts anyway. But I understand your point about not wanting to do separate issue reports on all of them. I think that makes sense. I have Wolfgang, I have Lonre, and I saw Kieran and so from the audience. So let me go. I know we have about 5 minutes left, so I want to try to keep that because we have a very short lunch planned. So, Wolfgang.
Yeah, thank you. Wolfgang Kleinwächter, and a couple of points. The first thing, I can only echo what Chuck and Mary and also Joy has said. If we move towards the special PDP with special protection for IGOs, we have to collaborate with the Governmental Advisory Committee. So there is no, we do not have neither the capacity nor the authority to decide what an intergovernmental organization is or not. So that means this should be really the guidelines should come from the Governmental Advisory Committee, say no. What is an intergovernmental organization? And I think it's we should be very clear that we do not set a criteria to define what an intergovernmental organization is or not. A similar thing with the non-governmental organization, which is probably more complex. I think there are lists of non-governmental organizations around, and I think the most relevant list is the register which has the ECOSOC from the United Nations, which has around 5,000 or 6,000 non-governmental organizations which are recognized by the ECOSOC. So this could probably be a criteria that we say, special NGOs which are recognized by the ECOSOC, which include all UNESCOs and other organizations also, because the ECOSOC is the binding organization between the United Nations and other UN organizations working together with NGOs. This could be a criteria, but my main point is here that if it comes to criteria, we should not reinvent the wheel, and we should look for competent other parties in the world who have define clear criteria. I think it's a similar procedure John Postel used when he established the CCTLD, that he said, you know, we are not in a position to define what a country is, so we are looking for relevant organizations which have a procedure, and he ended up with ISO 3166, which was a very clever decision. And if we move now towards IGOs and NGOs, we should have a similar approach. A very final remark to the IOC and Red Cross discussion, because I was a member of the drafting team, and I checked all the 1,932 applications and was looking for whether we have a case which is relevant to it, and I did not see that anybody applied for Red Cross or for Olympia or Olympiad or the IOC, neither the IOC or the Red Cross nor anybody else. So I think it was probably helpful to have this discussion which prevented an application. However, I discovered that the company Olympus applied for a new GTLD, and I would be interested to hear a comment from the IOC whether they see this as confusing similarity or what is their position. Remember, in the drafting team, we discussed options like the City Olympia or a restaurant Olympia or the Olympic Airways from Greek. And now, you know, the only case I have seen in the 1,900 plus applications is dot Olympus. So, but I think this could be an interesting case, and we can learn something out of this. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolfgang. I'm not going to put the Olympic Committee on the spot to answer that here, although they're free if they want to. But
I'm happy to answer that question.
Yeah, Kieran, if you want to.
Well, just very quickly, it was always the IOC's intention, and I think this was well expressed in our conversations in the drafting team, to allow for anybody with a legitimate interest in a trademark that might be objectively considered confusingly similar to the term Olympic to be allowed to register whatever they want according to their own rights. And I think that was well expressed in our drafting team considerations, well expressed in the GNSA recommendations. So obviously we have no concern about the application for Olympus.
Thanks, Kieran. Lonnie?
This is Lonnie. On the issue raised by Alan on the dissipating multiple efforts on one similar issue, I would like to recommend that maybe we should concentrate effort on the PDP and the IGOs. In other words, maybe the drafting team should start thinking of rounding up just to be able to have effort concentrated on one particular issue. And on the issue raised by Wolfgang about not reinventing the wheel, I think I support that. In that respect, I will also want to suggest that we possibly look at the criteria used for the use of .int. If we can get the criteria, maybe we could start using it to see if we could adopt it to see who is qualified for more protection. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, is there anyone else? Yes, in the back.
Alain Béranger, Chair ANPOC. Just a question of clarification and a suggestion. Does IGO mean international governmental organization or intergovernmental organizations? Second point, I think we should include also NGOs, international NGOs, that meet for criteria number one, and of course criteria number two would or scope would apply to them too.
Okay, thanks. And Kieran, right.
Sorry, I should have just done this while I was up here earlier. Very quickly, I just wanted to say I noticed in your presentation, Mr. Peck, that you kind of take for granted that the IOC-RC is being lumped into this PDP. And I did review the letters that came from the IGO Council to the board and to the board to the IGO Council and the conversations to the GNSO about this issue, and I don't see where in there you justify automatically including the considerations for the protections in this round in this PDP. And I think out of respect for all of the enormous amount of work that the drafting team has done and that our firm, as representatives of the ISC and the RC representatives, have done for protections in this round, I think that it would be a mistake for the GNSO Council to automatically assume that they're lumped in together for this PDP. I'd like to see that this round be considered separately and apart from the PDP, and then for future rounds, to lump it into a PDP, of course, is fine. So I'm curious to know, you said that your justification was contained in one of those letters, and I just kind of want to know where you found that, and maybe that's a discussion for another time since it's lunch, but that's just my concern.
Yes, please, Brian.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for Melanie. You can call me Brian, by the way. So, make me feel very old. It's all right. You're right. It wasn't justified out of a particular letter for the IGO's representatives to the council, or to the board, I should say. But what I meant to say, or to try to clarify, I apologize, I wasn't clear before. The background, and I think even from the GNSO motion itself, is that you have these three elements out here. You have the board, Singapore resolution that called for policy advice for beyond the first round for Red Cross and IOC names. And from that, you have, as you say, the specific IGO request to the board then requesting to the GAC and the GNSO Council for policy advice on that. And then you have the GAC proposal itself from September of last year, specifically related to the IOC Red Cross names. So you have those three elements that, we felt that rather than dealing with them separately, would be covered within the scope of the issue report. So it was not called, as you correctly pointed, it was not specifically called out from the IGO request, but the issue report takes into account those other elements that are also out there.
Okay, thanks, Brian, and I won't call you Mr. Peck. This is a key item that I've asked to be on the wrap-up session, so it's certainly an item that we need to talk about, how all of these things fit together. Is there any other questions? Okay, we have a break until 1 o'clock for lunch. We need to be back here right at that time yes, Thomas.
Just a little bit of housekeeping with respect to our GNSO dinner tonight, if I may.
Can I ask you to do that when we get back, first thing, because we have a very short amount of time for lunch?
We need to confirm the bus.
Oh, sorry. Do it now, yes.
We have made reservations for the dinner for 7. At the restaurant, have you seen on the list? You got some background information on that. So, if that's okay for you, we meet in the lobby at 6:45. So, mark your calendars for that. And for the return, we need to confirm when the bus takes us back to the hotel. Is that okay if we do that for 9:30? Is that
sure? I mean, if you think we're going to be done by then, yeah.
Hopefully. Otherwise, we need to call the hotel and ask for being picked up later. Okay, Glenn?
Thanks. And Glenn, do you want to tell everyone where lunch is? Lunch, not dinner. Lunch.
Lunch is in the atrium. And you walk out here, you go to the lift area. And you can either take the lift up one floor and just go across, or you can just walk up the steps, and it's exactly opposite when you walk up the steps.
Okay, see everyone at 1. We can stop the recording. Thank you.